However, today, as we are here in the heart of Damascus, welcomed by the Syrian President Bashar Assad, many whose enemies have said that they are not capable of understanding all the equations and have shown that he will not be removed from the political equations. It did not notice the question, what if the Syrian government did not fall? What if the Syrian president was not removed from the picture? There are no clear questions to this issue, and of course the result, more destruction, more bloodshed. Today we speak of the significant point in the Syrian crisis. The Syrian army is achieving many goals militarily, and of course at the same time the diplomatic side is also moving, and all sides are talking about the diplomatic talk and political talk, many questions that need answering, and the political side, the military side, and the Syrian army's entrance into the issue, the relations with the rivals and the friends, and what is the solution for Syria to be removed from this complex crisis, and which will continue, which will spill over to other countries. All these questions I will ask the Syrian President Bashar Assad. Assalamu alaikum, Mr. President. Mr. President, today we are in the heart of Damascus, in the palace of Damascus. Just 2 years and so on the crisis. Many have said that in some weeks the Syrian government will fall. What made this plan fail? What is the secret?
There is more than one angle. We have the Syrian angle, of course, which led to making the plot fail, and they themselves also made their plot fail without knowing what the situation is in Syria, without realizing what the situation is on the ground in detail in Syria. At the beginning, of course, they spoke about the revolution. A revolution needs certain factors. You cannot bring about a revolution by money. They also weren't able to achieve the circumstances which lay the foundations for a real revolution. They also took steps regarding sectarianism and sectarian terms in order to create divisions inside Syrian society. They were able to make some gains in some communities, and this exists in all societies. The weakness of vigilance. In the end, they weren't able to create such a division. In the true essence, they weren't able to create real divisions. If these real divisions were to take place, then there would have been a real problem. Syria would have been fragmented. They also fell into their trap. What is going on is a conflict for power. However, this is not true. It is not about a power or a seat. It is a battle for a nation, not about a position or a political stance. Nobody fights or is
the battle of this issue for the nation. It seems that the government feels that there is achievement on the ground in the battlefield. Why, after 2 years and a half, you have decided to go from the issue of defense into offense? Don't you believe that you are late in doing this, that taking this decision was taken late and to attack this issue, and that therefore the price is higher than it should have been? For example, Qusair.
We didn't rely on offense or defense or attacks and defense. The tactics, of course, focused on every battle separately. We dealt with it not only from a military perspective, we dealt with the issue from all different angles. We have the political angle or perspective and the social perspective, and there are many Syrians who believe what was said before, believe the lies. There are many friendly countries on the outside, friendly countries in the world, which don't understand what is going on. We couldn't take these steps when there is no general acceptance of what is going on. The developments which took place helped the Syrians to understand what is going on, and this helped the Syrian armed forces to carry out their duties and to make their achievements. What is going on right now is not taking steps from defense to offense. However, the balance of power changed in favor of the
armed
defense
forces. How did this equation turn? How the powers were turned? Many criticize Syria since that it has fighters from outside of Syria, that they are being held by fighters from Hezbollah Hezbollah, although there were articles that have said before that we are 23 million Syrians and we don't need help from outside. Why are Hezbollah people doing in Syria?
The reason for changing the balance of power behind this, we had, of course, the people who supported the militants in some areas, not because they don't have nationalism, but because they didn't know the true nature of these armed groups. Many people in Syria believe this was a revolution against the government. This changed. There is no longer that popular support, and many of the militants or the armed men withdrew from some terrorist groups. And this is the main reason. Regarding what is being spoken of now about Hezbollah and about Hezbollah's participation and fighters from outside Syria in support of the government, this is a very big issue. It has many factors. If we want to explain it, we must explain
all of the factors.
We cannot separate what was spoken of regarding Hezbollah in Al-Qusayr from the Israeli strike. We have three factors in one issue. And allow me to speak frankly. Recently, especially after the latest speech of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, in the Arab and foreign media, we heard that the fighters of Hezbollah are fighting in Syria and are defending the Syrian state. Between brackets, they spoke about the Syrian regime. We say state, not regime. To speak in a logical, rational way, if Hezbollah wants to defend Syria or the resistance, it will send a number of fighters. How many? A few hundred? 1,000? 2,000? We are speaking about, of course, a confrontation between hundreds of thousands from the Syrian armed forces and tens of thousands of foreign fighters, if not more, because the number continues to increase. They are continuing to feed these armed groups from neighboring countries and outside countries. And so this number, which Hezbollah can contribute to in helping the Syrians, if we compare it to the number of the Syrian armed forces and the terrorists and Syrian geography, this doesn't protect a regime or a state. This is on the one side. On the other side, they said that Hezbollah is defending the state. Why today? Why at this time? The battles began after Ramadan in 2011, and the battles escalated until we reached the summer of 2013, and then they began with the Battle of Liberating Damascus, and there was, of course, the important hour, and we had the assassination of the four generals, and many operations took place, and many people believe that that time was the appropriate time or the time where the state will fall, but it didn't fall. However, regardless, Hezbollah didn't intervene back then. So why is Hezbollah intervening now? We have another perspective. Why isn't there any Hezbollah presence in Damascus and Aleppo? The main battles are in those areas, not in Qusayr. Qusayr is a small city. Why didn't we see Hezbollah in Homs? All of these factors are not precise, are not correct. Al-Qusayr, they say, is strategic. All areas are strategic from the perspective of a terrorist. They are used for the infiltration of terrorists and smuggling weapons. So these issues have nothing to do with Hezbollah. If we relate what was discussed today, all this clamor, all this furor which we hear in the Arab media and the comments of Arab officials, and even Ban Ki-moon himself also issued a statement and expressed concern about Hezbollah's involvement in Qusayr. All of this is related to the attempt to strengthen the chokehold on the resistance, not the Syrian state. So what you said before, many achievements were made in Damascus and Aleppo and Damascus countryside. However, back then we didn't hear any talk about Hezbollah. We're hearing it now in Qusayr.
Mr. President, the nature of the battle which you and also Hezbollah are doing in Al-Qusayr, many criticize you for doing it an issue which is trying to secure the coast and the area from that area to Damascus in order for this place to be the nation, the so-called Alawite nation, what you are calling for, and the struggle with Israel.
First of all, the Syrian coast and the Lebanese coast doesn't go through Qusayr geographically. So this is illogical. Second of all, nobody wages a battle to go or to head towards divisions. If we go towards divisions, we will go to it, but we don't wage battles in all of the Syrian territories throughout Syria in order to head towards divisions, to head towards a specific corner in the country. The way the battles are going ahead doesn't show that we're heading towards divisions. No, on the contrary, these battles are being waged to preserve the territorial integrity of Syria, not the contrary. The second point is that our grandfathers used the same means against the French when the French tried to divide Syria. Our founding fathers or our grandfathers were vigilant towards this issue. We, as the grandchildren, after decades have passed, can we commit this mistake. No, I repeat once again, what is happening, Al-Qusayr, the battles, everything we hear about is related to Israel. The timing of the Qusayr battle is related to Israel. What is required is to, as I said, choke the resistance. This is the old new battle. It takes new forms. Now what is important is not Al-Qusayr as a city. What is important is the border. What they are aiming to do is to choke the resistance from the land and sea. So here a question must be raised. They say that the resistance must direct its arms towards the enemy and hence towards the south. This was stated on the 7th of May as well, when some of Syria's, of Israel's agents in Lebanon tried to touch or tried to infiltrate the Hezbollah's telecommunications. They said the same thing about the Syrian army. They said the Syrian army must fight on the border with Israel. We said very clearly that the army is fighting the enemy wherever this enemy may be present. When the enemy is from the north, we go to the north or the east or the west. The same goes for the resistance. Why is Hezbollah present on the border inside Lebanon or inside Syria? Because the battle is a battle against the Israeli enemy or its agents in Syria or in Lebanon.
The entrance of Israel in this equation and the Syrian crisis lately with the attacks against Syria, the Israeli attacks against Syria, Israel has directly linked this issue, linked the strike with message that it does not want to enter in the crisis. What does Israel want, and what kind of intervention could it do in the Syrian crisis?
This proves what I said. This is related to choking the resistance. Even the Israeli intervention and the Israeli support of the terrorists, this aim to achieve two goals. First of all, to choke the resistance, and second, to strike the Israeli air defense systems. And this shows that Israel wants to achieve these two goals.
As long as goals of Israel are clear, many have criticized Syria and the government of Syria that they were weak in responding to the strike. Everyone was waiting for a response from Syria, and the Syrian government has said that it holds on to its right to respond. However, why wasn't the response direct against Israel? It's not enough that the rockets were merely aimed towards Israel, and that any next strike will be faced with another respond with another strike by Syria.
Arabs and foreigners, and most of them were foreigners who called us. We told them that we will respond the next time. Of course, there was more than one response or retaliation. There were Israeli attempts, and we responded to these Israeli attempts. However, the temporary response has no value. It will be of political nature. If we want to retaliate against Israel, the retaliation must be a strategic retaliation.
For example, in Golan Heights?
This relies, first of all, on the situation here in Syria. The popular opinion is...
How will the issues continue in Syria?
Popular support for opening the front of the Golan Heights for the resistance. And there is enthusiasm, even Arab enthusiasm. We have received Arab delegations asking, where can we register our names to fight against Israel? Of course, resistance is not a simple operation. It's not only opening the geographic lines. It's political, ideological, and also has a social angle. And in the end, it's a military operation.
Mr. President, if we take into consideration what has happened in the Golan Heights, that the one Israeli vehicle was attacked by the Syrian army, are we in a state of change of the rules of engagement, or is it still a natural rules of engagement? What is this new equation that
we're
talking about?
The real change in rules of engagement is when there is a popular support for the resistance. Any other change is temporary, except if we go towards a war. Any retaliation of any kind from the outside will be changing rules of engagement. However, I don't think it is as such. The real change would be for the people to go to resistance. This will be the fundamental dramatic change.
Don't you believe that this talk is too late? How about after 40 years that there was peace in the Golan Heights? Now we are talking about moving the land of Golan Heights and creating new rules of the game.
They say that Syria is closing the front or opening the front. Of course, you cannot bring a resistance to birth. A popular resistance cannot come from nothing. If it's not a popular resistance, it is not a resistance. The state cannot support or deny the resistance. I believe that the state which stands against resistance is a state which is on the verge of collapse. Of course, Syria didn't decide after 40 years. We have an army which is carrying out its duty, and so from my perspective, let's say the ideological perspective from the citizens is that someone is carrying out its duty to liberate territories. If there were not an army, just as we saw in Lebanon, where there was a divided state and a divided army during the civil war, then we would have seen a resistance from a long time ago in Syria. Now, under these circumstances, there are many motives. First of all, we have the repeated Israeli aggressions. This is a fundamental reason which brings about popular resistance. And second of all, the armed forces, Syrian armed forces, preoccupied in more than one area on Syrian territory, and this gives a feeling to many Syrian citizens that it is their duty now to take steps regarding the Golan Heights to support the Syrian armed forces.
Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that Israel will not be weak in striking Syria if the strategic arms are taken to Hezbollah. I want a direct response from you. What would you do if this happens?
We informed other countries that we would respond to any strike with a strike of our own. Of course, now it's difficult to know how we would respond militarily. We leave this to the military commanders. However, we have a lot of scenarios. This, of course, is related to the timing of the strike and the circumstances which allow for the use of a specific weapon with more efficiency. Of course, using this weapon with more efficiency than another weapon.
Mr. President, after the Israeli strike against Damascus, many have said that there is the S-300 weapons system which will be given to Syria, and Netanyahu has criticized this. One clear question: is the system taken to Syria? Was given Syria? Is it on its way to Syria already?
To the military perspective, what we have or what we receive. However, regarding Russia, the contracts are not related to the crisis. We are negotiating with Russia regarding different kinds of weapons. The negotiations have been going on for years, and Russia is committed with Syria in implementing these contracts. So, what I want to say is that Netanyahu's visit, nor the crisis itself or its circumstances, had any effect on sending arms from Russia to Syria. What we agreed upon with Russia will be implemented, and part of it has been implemented over the recent period, and we, together with the Russians, we are continuing to implement these contracts.
Mr. President, we spoke about the resilience of the Syrian government and, of course, the investment of the Syrian army and the work on the between the Syrian government and the resistance, the strong alliance between that, all this, and you also have the other side, the other bloc, also a political movement. And before we talk about the Geneva summit and the so-called red lines that Syria would put, there is a very simple discussion that Maaz al-Khatib, head of the National Council, said that we will allow the Syrian government with 50 figures from Syria to leave Syria, and therefore the crisis will be over. Why will you not respond to this demand or this call, and therefore this crisis will be over?
I always spoke and stressed on a principle that the decision of the president is related to the people themselves. So anybody who speaks about this issue must announce who represents him amongst the Syrian people. Is he being delegated by the Syrian people or what? I haven't read this initiative. I heard about this initiative and I was very happy that they gave me 20 days and 500 people. However, I'm not sure who raised this, him or somebody else. I'm not sure about that.
In any case, this was something that was said, that was that you have several days without guarantees, and we don't know how the court or justice will follow you, Mr. President. This will bring us to the issue of political negotiations. We are talking about the second Geneva summit. We are talking about that there is clear acceptance from the Syrian government to take part in the summit. The word negotiations, at the end of this issue, there is a table, and of course there will be the Syrian government, the Syrian flag, government's flag, and there will also be the flag of the Syrian opposition. How will you convince the Syrian people that you will stand side by side with these groups?
First of all, regarding the flag has no importance. The people, when we put a flag on the table or anywhere, we say, who are the people represented by this flag or related to this flag? This is a question we can raise to anybody who wants to put Syrian flags other than the main official Syrian flag. There is no value for all of these flags when it doesn't reflect a people. This is one side. The second side is we, as a delegation, we will go to this conference as legitimate representatives officially of the Syrian people. Who do they represent? We, when the conference ends, we will go back to Syria. We will go back to our homes. We will go back to our people. When the conference ends, where will they go? Will they go back to their five-star hotels, or will they go back to the foreign ministries in the countries which they represent, the non-Syrian countries, to provide these countries with reports, or to the intelligence services of these countries? So when we go to this conference, we must know very clearly that part of those who will sit down on the table, I say part of them because it's not clear the details of a conference, what is the stance of the Syrian national opposition, the other parties in Syria, and other questions. However, the foreign opposition which you are speaking of and the flag which you are referring to, we know that we are going to Geneva to hold negotiations with the countries who stand behind this foreign opposition, not with the foreign opposition themselves. When we negotiate with the slaves, we negotiate with the masters of the slaves, really. This is something true. We must not hide behind our fingers.
Are you convinced in the Syrian government that this table of negotiations will be held and these negotiations will take place?
Yes, I expect this, except if some try to disrupt this process. We announced 2 days ago that in principle we agreed
this to participate. This were the preliminary acceptance or primary acceptance. Why don't you understand that?
Because
why will not be a way back?
The principle of holding the conference is true, but what are the details? Are there conditions which they will lay down before the conference? If they lay down conditions, we won't go. But the principle of holding a conference, the meeting, this is good.
Let us speak of the conditions that the Syrian government has put forth. What are the conditions of the Syrian government?
Very simply, the only condition is that anything, any steps being taken, whether they be inside or on the outside, this must be subject to a consensus or a referendum for the Syrian people. This is the only condition. Everything must be given to the Syrian people. The Syrian people must have the final say. So we are very comfortable. We have no problems. They can propose what they want and we can propose what we want. However, nothing can be carried out or implemented except according to the will of the people. And as long as we represent the people, we have nothing to be afraid of.
Let us also make this clear. A lot of ambiguity there was clear from the in Geneva 1 and Geneva 2 on the issue of a transition and also the role of President Bashar Assad. Are you ready to surrender to several conditions?
This is something which I clarified in the initiative which I launched in the first month of this year. They say that they want a transitional government whereby the president has no role. Of course, the president isn't our prime minister. We have a presidential system in Syria. The president is president of the republic. He doesn't have the head the government. We have a prime minister. They want a government with good powers, with expansive powers. The Syrian constitution gives the government complete powers, and the president is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces and the army, and he is the head of the judiciary. But the other institutions are all subject to the government, under the oversight of the government. However, changing the authorities of the president is according to the constitution. The president cannot abandon or give up his powers, and the president doesn't own the constitution. So when they want to make these proposals, they can propose in the conference, and when we agree on something, if we agree, we then go back and we hold it to a referendum. We see what the opinion of the Syrian people is, then we take steps. But then to propose constitutional amendments before the conference, this is something which the president cannot do, nor the government, and we cannot do it. Constitutionally, we cannot do it.
Mr. President, honestly, all the global positions and all your rivals, political rivals, have all said that there should not be a role for Bashar Assad in the second transition period or next period. All the Qataris and the Turks and also the Syrian opposition. Will President Bashar Assad also go into the elections.
I know that Faisal is focused on American affairs. I don't know if he knows anything about Syrian affairs. If he wants to learn about Syria, that's okay. Regarding the wishes of others, I say once again, the Syrian people will have the final say. Regarding my candidacy, this was proposed by some. Some said we would prefer that the President Bashar Assad not be a candidate for elections of 2014. I said that this issue should be decided at that time. It's too early to speak about such a matter. However, when the time comes and when I feel that there is a necessity for me to be a candidate, of course this necessity is decided by my contacts with the people, and if I feel that they want me to be a candidate, then I would not hesitate to be a candidate. But if the Syrian people don't want this, then I will not be a candidate. So are they wasting their time in this issue?
Mr. President, you spoke of the issue of Mr. Saud al-Faisal, the foreign minister, This brings me to a question to the relations of Syria with Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Turkey, especially if we take into consideration their position that they were a bit moderate. They did not call for the ousting of Mr. Bashar Assad. Do you sense that there is some kind of change in their perspective and that they might call for a political solution to the issue, and is Syria ready to deal with the Arab League easily, and especially since they have called
regarding
for this
Arab
issue?
Arab countries, we are witnessing temporary changes related to their rhetoric, not to the practice on the ground. The countries which support terrorists haven't changed. They are still supporting terrorists at the same level. Turkey also, there is nothing serious from Turkey. Regarding Qatar, the same stance, the bank, the financer of the terrorist, and it supports via Turkey. So really there is no change. Regarding the Arab League, of course, from our perspective in Syria, we never pinned our hopes on the Arab League, even in previous decades. We were barely able to of course stop the divisions in the previous conferences on the level of foreign ministers or heads of state. So should we expect from the Arab League to play a role? We are in contact with all sides. We don't close the doors to any side. However, we must be realistic and we must realize that this side is incapable of giving anything, especially because a huge number of these Arab countries are not independent. They receive orders from the outside. Some of them are with us in their hearts. However, they are not with us in the decisions,
yes,
and in the
decision,
the practice and implementation, because they don't own their own decisions. So we don't pin our hopes on the Arab League, to be clear.
Mr. President, this will also bring us to another question. If the Arab atmosphere is on this case, how about the developments on the ground and the battles on resilience and the Geneva summit? The primary question here, what if the negotiations failed? What will happen after this? What are the consequences, do you think, of the failure
this,
of negotiations?
It's possible. This scenario is possible. There are some countries who are trying to sabotage the conference, and if they weren't embarrassed or cornered, they wouldn't have done this. Of course, so this scenario, even the Russians, the statements from the Russians also tried to decrease the expectations. However, we must also be very precise in saying what this dialogue is. What has this dialogue have to do with what is going on in the ground? Most of these powers which are speaking about what is going on in Syria, they have nothing to do with Syria internally, even with the terrorists directly. And the terrorists are related directly to these countries in some cases, and in other cases they are gangs who get money according to the sabotage which they carry out. So the failure of the conference, I don't think it will change much regarding the reality on the ground in Syria, because these countries, whether it be with a conference or without a conference, they won't stop the support, and the terrorists won't stop the acts of sabotage.
Yes, Mr. President. Now, the events in Syria and the crisis seems to be spilling over to neighboring countries. What we see in Iraq and the bombings inside Rahaniya and Turkey, and even here for us in Lebanon, the questions that we have in Arsal, we have the events in Tripoli, we have Hezbollah taking part in the fighting in Qusayr. How does Syria deal with the issue of Lebanon? You think Lebanon's policy of dissociation still holds?
Let's ask questions from the reality of the situation in Lebanon and Syria regarding the dissociation policy, in order for me not to be accused of evaluating and saying this policy is good or this policy is bad. We ask a simple question: was Lebanon able to prevent Lebanese intervention in Syria? Was it able to prevent the infiltration of armed men and weapons into Syria, or provide a refuge for those people, for those fighters? No. Everybody knows that Lebanon contributed to the Syrian crisis negatively. Recently, was Lebanon able to protect itself from the repercussions of the Syrian crisis, repercussions on Lebanon, in Tripoli, for example, and the rockets or missiles which have been fired on Beirut or other areas around Beirut. Of course, this all happens. So what disassociation are we talking about? Lebanon disassociating itself is something, and the government disassociating itself is something else. When the government disassociates itself from a specific issue, and this issue concerns and has an effect on the interests of the citizens, it is then disassociating itself from the citizens themselves. I'm not speaking now to criticize the Lebanese government. I'm speaking about general principles. I don't want to be accused of criticizing this government. If the Syrian government wanted to disassociate itself from issues related to the Syrian people, then this would have failed when problems happen in a neighboring country. When we have the house of my neighbor on fire, I cannot say that I have nothing to do with it. This fire will then reach my house. And so we don't believe that such talk is possible, realistically.
Mr. President, what do you say to those who love the resistance bloc and support it? We are in the events of celebrating the anniversary of Liberation Day, and we spoke of a certain victory for and this issue for by head of Hezbollah, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah. What do you say for the popular people, the people who support the resistance? Will we be removed from this dark tunnel?
The biggest victory which the resistance or the Arab resistances achieved during decades and years, first of all, was the ideological victory. It wasn't able, or we wouldn't have been able to achieve military victory were it not for the ideological victory. We confronted big campaigns in this region. In Lebanon, there was a term which said that Lebanon's strength lies in its weakness. This was stated before the Lebanese Civil War. This is similar. It's just like saying that the wisdom of someone lies in his stupidity. The victories of a resistance, the different victories which were achieved at different stages, showed that this is not true, that the weakness of Lebanon is in its weakness and its strength lies in its strength. Lebanon's strength lies in its resistance, and Lebanon's strength lies with those resistance fighters which you are speaking of. Today, we need such ideology and thinking and such perseverance, and we need such action from these resistance fighters, such operation at this stage more than ever before, because the events which the Arab street has witnessed over the last 2 years, or even more than last 2 years, these events struck the understandings to the extent that some Arabs forgot that the enemy Israel, and the enemy has become an internal enemy, a sectarian enemy, a racial enemy, for example. So today we are relying on the resistance fighters in order to remind the Arab people, by the achievements which the resistance achieves, that the enemy remains the same, is at the same place. Regarding my confidence in victory, if we weren't confident in achieving victory, then we wouldn't have been able to persevere for all this time. We wouldn't have been able to continue with this battle after 2 years, 2 years of an international global attack. It's not the war which we witnessed in 1956. It's a world war now being waged against Syria and being waged against the resistance as well. So our confidence is certain regarding victory, and I assure you that Syria will be as it always was, supporting the resistance and resistance fighters anywhere in the Arab world.
At the end of this interview, I want to thank you very much. I am honored to have you as my guest today. Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much. Thank you, and I would like to congratulate Al Manar TV, the television station of resistance, on Liberation Day, and I congratulate the Lebanese people and every resistance fighter in Lebanon. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, my viewers, for staying with us. I want to thank all those who are with us